Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty lady.
Welcome in to Helmets and Heels as we follow the first shows live here at the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open at Hidden Hills. Taylor Dahl, Mia O'Brien, all in the fold. RJ Saunders back at 1010XL headquarters. I'm Lauren Brooks. Well, ladies, everyone else is playing golf. We have to talk sports. What a tough job we have.
I was out there on the course getting some of our wonderful videos and social that you will find on the 1010XL video channels, and I had more than one of our coworkers and various friends of 1010 come up to me and be like, aren't you playing? And I was like, well, I do have a show to do at 12 o'clock in the middle of the first round. Yeah, so unfortunately, no, not able to golf, but you couldn't ask for better weather. It is starting to warm up a little bit. I know I saw 90s this weekend. Mm-hmm. We felt it a little bit out here at Hidden Hills Golf Club, which thanks again to our hosts who do such a great job here at Hidden Hills and getting the course ready for the Guggen Open each year. But yeah, it's here. It's warm. And I'm not going to lie, ladies, I was a little worried that there was something wrong with me, but then I'm driving around on the golf cart with Graham Marsh, and he's sneezing too. The allergy season, it's back. But hey, if it means good weather, we will take it.
You're talking to the allergy queen here. But it was the guy over there. He was kind of taking, I guess, mowing the lawn, doing something over there with groundskeeping, and he was sneezing on his thing driving around, and I was like, bless you.
Hope you can hear me. Yeah, certainly pollen means that allergies kick up, but we will take the sunshine for sure.
Definitely.
I feel like we've always had, knock on wood, good weather for the Guggen, so certainly hope everyone's having a blast out there as we are going to here. So Saturday, speaking of good weather, drove down to Gainesville, high was 76 degrees. So another gorgeous day there. Got to watch the Orange and Blue game. Used to be called the Orange and Blue Debut. I don't know why they ever went away from that, because Orange and Blue Debut sounds way cooler than Orange and Blue Game. Mm-hmm. Then we went over to the baseball park, the Condren Ballpark, and it was just a fabulous day. And so we will talk to Nick De La Torre in the 1 o'clock hour at 1:30 and talk to him about the game as far as the overall takes he got, what Billy Napier said, all that kind of fun stuff. I'll share some of my thoughts as well. But we're going to kick off the show talking about the Masters. There wasn't much drama, which I didn't need, because the course is so gorgeous. And Scottie Scheffler, for me, is a likable guy. And it wasn't a live guy. I was rooting so hard against Bryson DeChambeau. You have no idea. And so for me, it was a fabulous tournament.
I tweeted it out because I went a little viral, I guess, right after the Players' Championship on XL Primetime with my comments surrounding, does Scottie Scheffler move the needle after becoming the first back-to-back Players' Champion? Because it truly does feel, and I talked to Mark Carnevale yesterday on the phone about it, like, of PGA Tour Live, our good friend of the program, and, you know, I said to him that I was right when I said last week, it's like UConn in men's college basketball, it's like South Carolina in women's college basketball, albeit with a few exceptions in that tournament.
Yeah.
It is Scottie Scheffler against the field, and it has been that way for the better part of the last year, especially the last 3 months. And do you find that entertaining enough or not? Because if we go back to the 90s and the early 2000s, when it was Tiger versus the field, everyone was tuned in. Can you actually generate interest when the outcome is already known? And I will tell you that despite the fact that Scottie Scheffler was up 4 strokes with, what, 3 holes to play, and I had some other things I should probably be doing around the house, I couldn't stop watching. And that was the moment I said to that argument, to that previous clip, I dug it up and I said, you know what? Maybe he is moving the needle. And part of it was because I was rooting for him to get the call that his wife was in labor, because I just mostly wanted to see if he could finish the round quickly. Would he sprint off the course? Would it be dramatic? Which she was not at Augusta, but I was hoping she would be. And then, like, not trying to root for this, Meredith. I don't want to wish pain upon you, but, like, if her water breaks on 18 green as they're celebrating, what happens, you know? Like, I was rooting for that chaos.
And by the way, she's not due till the end of the month.
Right.
So she still has a couple weeks. So
my
friend yesterday who we were watching with, who had a baby less than a year ago, was like, it's her first kid. She is not going early. Everyone can relax.
Like, but I was like, but that's the thing, is like, I was rooting for the chaos just because I thought the content would be great.
Yeah.
But I was watching solely for him, because at this point in time, you know, it is like Tiger. It is like Caitlin Clark, where you are just saying, my God, like, we have never seen something like this outside of perhaps Tiger Woods on a golf course, where it is just so entertaining. You know it's coming, but you can't look away.
And for me, Taylor, we already had villains in this. That, to me, villains in sports, or rivalries in sports, especially when there are villains involved, that's what heightens it, and that's what brings in those casual fans.
Definitely.
We already have villains in golf because we have the LIV guys, at least if you're looking at it from my perspective. And so, to me, people want to classify Scottie Scheffler as boring, and I can understand that argument. But it's funny and ironic to me because we complain when athletes are doing bat flips or they're doing gestures at other players in
or
the
when
game.
Or when they're doing things off the field
right,
or off the
and
course.
So it's like we don't like it when they're when they have too much personality, but we don't like it when they're quote-unquote
no
boring and they don't have enough of a personality. Like, nobody can ever be satisfied. But in the end, to me, the Masters, I think, just was another reason to watch was Scottie Scheffler.
Yeah, and I think to me, even going back to Thursday, Friday, because you did have the drama of people being dramatic. You were having golf clubs being thrown, and you were having people getting genuinely frustrated because they couldn't make it.
It was
so
windy. Yeah, exactly.
And I thought it was fantastic because I relate to that. First of all, I'm a terrible golfer, and I've joked on here about even my putt-putt game being terrible. And so that's how I feel when I'm even putt-putting, when it hops over a rock and goes in that water. And I was like, man, they're feeling my pain right now.
You're going to be like Tyrell Hatton, you're going to pick up your ball and throw it in the water.
Yeah. So you had that. Like, you had the little bit of drama in the beginning. There was a slight second that you felt like Aubert may have been getting a little closer to Scheffler, and that was, at least you had that moment where you're like, okay, there's this young guy that is actually like making a name for himself and coming into the tour and becoming, when I joked about learning his name at the Players Championship in seven different formats, and now you're talking about him week to week. So those things are fun to me, and as much as it's not maybe that last day coming down to the final hole or a playoff or whatever it may be, you still have things throughout this. And then, yes, of course, the people with LIV Golf now and the people who do not like LIV Golf and, you know, like you said, villains to a lot of people when it comes to the golf world, you had that to where, aside from DeChambeau, there's a few other guys in that top 12, 15, but a lot of them were terrible. DJ,
yes.
Terrible. The update, I think it might have been on Friday. One of the Masters updates that plays on our station was like, and DJ Dustin Johnson's preparing to go hang out with Paulina this weekend because he's 13 over. And I was like, just things like that. That to me adds all of these other elements. Even if you're not looking at the top 3-4 players, there's a whole leaderboard that you can look at.
And what's great to me, Mia, we are 8 minutes into our first segment. And yes, you've referenced Tiger Woods, but you did not reference him as far as this tournament is concerned. I think the PGA Tour is thriving even without Tiger. Yes, he played. He made the cut. That was great. He has a record now for made cuts at the Masters. But no eye, and yes, all eyes
Which,
are
by the way,
on
making
Tiger.
The cut for Tiger
is huge.
Was huge. Yeah. And like, yes, you can
He fell apart on Saturday.
Right. You could talk about how he fell apart on Saturday. But for him to put two great rounds together back to back, that is progress for a guy who, you know, how many months ago could barely walk 18?
And especially when even once he was able to play a little bit after that day one, that recovery time was his biggest thing. And
yeah.
So now it looks
45
like
minutes. Get back out there.
Yeah. And so now, yes, you have that day two where you're still seeing him compete. You're seeing him make the cut, and maybe there's still there's progress there rather than just being like, okay, Tiger's done, there's no chance. You saw something, and for the Tiger fans, that's fantastic.
Yes, and maybe one day he'll be able to compete again, or maybe he decides that and we all know his peak years are behind him, maybe he decides he wants to do something else. We shall see. He's such a competitive guy that I feel like it had to hurt his soul to come in at anything over par, right?
Yeah.
Especially at Augusta, when he has played there so well and won so many times. But I think at the end of the day, we are talking way more about Scheffler. And I asked Mark, you referenced Mark, Mia. I asked him last week about, does the Tiger factor reduce the pressure on Scotty as far as leading up to the tournament? It seemed like more people were talking about the fact that Tiger was going to play than Scotty could win a second Masters and coming off of a back-to-back players win. I feel like that conversation probably ended up helping him just a little bit because he was able to kind of relax. Yes, still with the baby on the way, but he was able to relax.
I think that if you talk to anybody who watched the early part of Saturday's coverage, they would tell you that Tiger could have hit the ball in the water on 3 straight holes, and Jim Nance would have said, and that's a record for number of ripples set. Because, yes, there obviously is always going to be a fixation on Tiger because the belief from the inside baseball, behind-the-scenes media perspective is, if we just show Tiger, people will want to watch Tiger. And I think you are getting to a point now where people say, and I'm seeing it from some of you on the text line as I'm a Lifetime Enclosures, that you don't need to see Tiger. Like, you just want to see the golf.
Yeah.
And whether it's to watch guys just completely implode, or it is to watch elite golf like Scottie Scheffler, who, by the way, you couldn't help on that back nine on Sunday but say, as everyone else around him was seemingly falling apart, with the exception maybe of Ludvig Åberg, who was able to fall apart and come back, Scottie was Mr. Consistent, akin to Tiger Woods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where it's fascinating to see, Lauren, because I just hope golf doesn't take a turn akin to Major League Baseball, where you have the opportunity now to capitalize and market a Scottie Scheffler. I understand he's the type of guy where, you know, like, he was even asked, like, does winning this tournament previously help you? And he goes, no, I just got to go out there and play. It's a new day. Like, it's that's like, I understand that that's not necessarily as sexy in marketing terms, but
the truth.
But at the same time, this guy is as dialed in as any player as we've seen since Tiger. And so, like, market that. Don't be like Major League Baseball, where you have these personalities, you have this opportunity to market it, and you're choosing not to.
Yeah, Taylor, to me, what was stunning is he wins the Players after dealing with severe neck pain to start the tournament. This time he wins with all eyes on him other than maybe Tiger. Yeah. And also his wife being pregnant, and there's a lot of talk about that. Does he reduce the amount of golf he plays moving forward? I mean, right now that's all we want to talk about, but he even said, you know, now golf is not his focus. Is he one of those guys that cares way more about being a family man? Do we eventually stop talking about Scottie Scheffler playing in, or winning, I should say, all these majors because he's finally just going to, I've got a ton of money. I mean, I know that's not what most people think, but you have to wonder because he is so different than any other golfer.
Yeah, and obviously I don't have the answer to that question of what he's thinking, but it is a valid question. And I think when it comes to Scheffler, there's just moments too where watching him over the weekend where you're just like, you don't even see any ounce of where you felt like things were about to go bad.
Which,
like,
we don't smooth. Feel that. Like, no. When was the last time you felt that about a golfer?
Yeah.
It's that wiggle that he does. Yeah. That gets all of his nerves out.
Yeah, gets it out, and then he's good to go. So it's just like there were so many moments this weekend where I'm like, he is not even flinching at any of these moments. And like I said, even when Ludvig was getting a little closer, he goes up two shots right away. And it's just like simple, no problem, move on. And with all of this pressure of going back to Players Championship, he had just come off another event win, so he won back-to-back events in that, then wins the Players, dealing with having to get massaged in between each hole, and then he comes and wins the Masters for back-to-back times. It's incredible. And I think, to me, guys, another storyline too that kind of pops out in the opposite light is I feel so bad for Rory. He just gets here and
he is allowing that idea of the outside pressure.
Yeah,
everyone's talking about Tiger, but Rory's still thinking about, I need to complete the career Grand Slam. I've never won.
Maybe he just needs to get, I don't know how, but get that out of your head and just play like you can. I know in 2022 he was T2nd, so that was the closest. But even that leaderboard, I think someone ended up winning by like 4 or 5 shots. So that was the closest he had in that moment, and it was still like out of arm's reach.
Yeah, I don't know if I feel bad for him. That's interesting. I think because once somebody has won a ton, and I understand, like you said, he's chasing the career Grand Slam, but he's been so successful, so I don't necessarily feel as bad for him, but I do understand how badly he wants to win, and so therefore, yes, he puts way too much pressure on himself and doesn't play well, seemingly at Augusta. There are other guys, too, though, that would be in the same category, Taylor, as far as like a Jordan Spieth, who was so successful for their 2 to 3 year period and now is not playing nearly as well. Justin Thomas, another guy, used to be, we thought, you know, we always talk about these guys who can be the next Tiger. I'm so sick of that conversation because there is never going to be another Tiger. Yeah, yeah. So let's just talk about them in the moment. But those guys certainly are guys that you thought would play well. By the way, Taylor, how did Brooks Koepka finish up? What was his?
He ended up being terrible, which is fine because if I gave my jinx to him over Victor Hovland, I'm good for that. But Victor, didn't
dude, I was just gonna say, don't even get me started about our good friend Victor because
he started great. I was like, okay, this is it. That's what I needed to do is not pick him.
and listen, I feel bad that I picked him. Did I jinx him with my MyBookie picks that I picked Hovland? Because here's the thing, I picked Victor Hovland because I'm like, okay, it's the Masters. Like, yes, you need to be able to drive for show, putt for dough. Yeah. I get that. But the iron game is so critical, especially with the way the wind was blowing. Mm-hmm. And I was on the right track. I just probably should have picked Colin Morikawa instead of Victor Hovland.
Yeah.
Before we transition, because I want to make sure we do hit some highlights with you, Lauren, since you were in Gaines, Vegas for the spring game on Saturday, I just need to read this text.
Okay, go
off,
for it.
Off the text line design, okay. My lifetime enclosures. And all of you driving around, just take a second. The year is 2024. And this was just texted in on the 1010XL text line. After not watching golf for many years, I decided to watch the TPC and the Masters this year. What an amazing waste of time. The top golfers have the mental toughness of George Costanza. Needless to say, I don't think I will ever watch golf again. Bring in the WNBA draft tonight, baby.
Oh.
Wow.
What a turn. What a turn that was. Plot twist.
Yeah.
Thank you, RJ, back at 1010XL World Headquarters.
I, for the record, though, I can't imagine having watched the Players in the Masters and not wanting to watch more golf. Like, no. I mean, I'm also somebody that loves attending these. I've never been to the Masters. If someone ever wants to offer me a ticket.
I'm not even a golf girl, and I enjoyed both.
Exactly. Yeah, you don't have. I don't think you have to watch it as closely as you do other sports too, because you can kind of glance at the leaderboard if you want.
Yeah,
and just keep tabs on that. Which on Saturday, by the way, driving home from Gainesville, my dad was driving, and so my mom and I are in the back seat, and the ability to watch live television while in a moving vehicle, I will always appreciate. So I'm able to pull up the Masters and root like heck for Bryson DeChambeau to have his implosion, which he did, and that was fantastic, and so I was just so happy. You did mention Gainesville. So the way that the spring game was done, you had the orange team, which we ended up sitting, my parents and I ended up sitting like 10 rows from the field. We were right behind where the players' families sit, which was fantastic because we got to not necessarily hear the coaches or the players, but we could see them interact with one another. I got to see Scott Strickland talking to people, especially Florida Victorious people. I got to see Todd Golden at one point in time. So that part was really cool. We were really close. So
shout
we were
out behind, Florida Victorious.
That's right. We were behind the orange team, which had DJ Lagway on it. And then the blue team was on the opposite sidelines with Graham Mertz as far as the quarterbacks are concerned. But a couple of players jumped off the page, and I'm sure you all saw on Twitter, the running back, Jaden Baugh. Everyone was like, the first time he got the ball, everyone's looking at their rosters, whether printed or digital, going, wait, who is that? Okay, yep, Trevor Etienne, bye. We don't necessarily think that you're going to be that missed. Now, that, again, you also are so angry when a player leaves for your rival school, especially one that's been winning. So you're already, like, wanting to have a replacement. But really, ball looked fantastic. And again, it's a spring game. Take it for what you will. But yeah, the headliner, of course, DJ Lagway. He certainly looks the part, did have one interception, but so did Mertz. And I think Gator Nation is going to be able to understand why Napier is going to start Mertz. Mertz is polished. Mertz knows where to go with the football. He's obviously very accurate. And he already has a relationship with guys like Trey Wilson and Aiden Mizell, the freshman, and guys like that. So Mertz will be the starter. Will DJ Lagway have a role? Absolutely. And you got to see some of the special skills that he has that certainly Mertz does not, and that is running the football.
So you do think there will be packages akin to when Cam Newton, I did say it, when Cam Newton was in Gainesville and Tim Tebow was the starting quarterback.
Yes, I think, who knows, because it's Napier, who knows exactly how quickly he'll start that, whether it's going to be against Miami, I don't know, because you do have to remember Napier loves Mertz, and here's a guy now with 4 years of experience, all these starts under his belt, and Napier knows how incredibly important that first game is against the in-state rival Miami. So will we see a bunch of Lagway in that game? That I don't know.
Okay,
but do I think over the course of the season you will see a lot of DJ Lagway? Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Any other standouts for you? I'm of course thinking of the hometown guy, my guy, Grayson, my good friend, Grayson Howard.
Yes, Grayson Howard. So as far as defensively, guys that stood out to me, Grayson Pup Howard, certainly. He is physical. He is a sure tackler. That is one thing Florida was not good at last year, is tackling. That is one thing I noticed in the spring game. There were some pops on some hits.
Okay.
And like I said, we were really
close.
Granted,
it was gator on gator, as we like to say, jag on jag.
Yes, but last
year
in the spring game, Florida blitzed a ton, and the defense won. The final score was 10-7.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So this time it was technically 17-14. Some people wonder why at practice one team was given, the blue team was given the advantage because they won practice, but nobody got to see that. So don't start the spring game with a 3-0 lead for a team when nobody scored yet. But that's Napier for you and his staff. But Asa Turner, the transfer from Washington, the DB, looked fantastic. Mm. Tall, athletic, fast. He's a guy that looks like he brings immediate leadership as well as far as watching him closely. So yeah, defensively, I liked those guys. Cam Jackson at one moment, he's bigger and not necessarily in the best way, but he has time, plenty of time before the fall starts to lose a little bit of weight. But at one point in time, he went down with, we didn't know exactly what it was, kind of looked like maybe an elbow injury, but he got up, walked off, and seemed to be fine, and he played more. So everything should be fine there. To my knowledge, there were not any major injuries, which is also what you want out of a spring game.
Sounded like it. One more for me. And again, Nick De La Torre of On3 is going to join us at 1:30, excuse me, to further break down not only the spring game, but the comments from Billy Napier following Saturday's spring showcase. The offensive line, Lauren, we know that it was a question mark at times last year, a revolving door at times because of injuries. Did you see enough? And again, I understand it's a glorified practice. Yeah. Did you see enough, though, that you say they paid attention to those holes in the offseason or banked on development?
Yeah, that's the one position group that I think it might be the hardest to tell in a spring game. But I will say I am not going to say the offensive line is going to be a lot better. I think that's still going to be an area where Florida struggles. Did they pay attention to it? Sure. But they're bringing back a lot of the same guys, like we talked about with the Jags. And so
if they're healthy and they develop, then everything's
fine. But I did see
some
good run plays. So you do think, all right, well, they blocked certainly well. But again, how good is Florida's defensive front?
Yeah.
So to where the offensive line is getting pushed too. So, but again, that to me, it's the lines of scrimmage. That's the one bad part about a spring game because it is not Florida versus another team to where it's the hardest to tell. To me, you can watch the quarterbacks. You can watch the skill guys the most. And Florida does not have a backup kicker. If anything happens to Trey Smack, Florida is in serious trouble.
Oh, no.
He went 3-0. The backup kicker was either 0-3 or 0-4. I think it was 0-4. So, yeah, hopefully Trace. And, again, that's special teams.
So stay healthy.
But special teams for some teams is something that they're proud of. And yeah, they can rely
on.
Right. When it comes to Billy Napier's team last year. Yeah, exactly, for Iowa. I did hear Tony Pauline last week. I forgot to mention this on air. Talk about the only punter he would draft, of course, is Iowa's punter.
Oh, Torrey Taylor. Yeah, well, that's a given. Although I did find out I have a connection now to Jeremy Crenshaw, one of my good buddies.
Crenshaw,
one of my good buddies, former coworkers, apparently.
That's Florida's
had no
punter.
Idea because he's adopted that they're cousins.
Oh,
so
there you
look
go.
At that. So crazy fun facts.
Well,
here.
You can follow his career this season as well as I will.
Yeah, punters. I of course would be remiss if we got out of the first segment and I didn't ask about Mark Long's tweet from Saturday's spring game, Lauren. It only took 5 special team snaps in the spring game for the Gators to end up with 10 men on the field. The first 4 were flawless, though.
Yes. You know what?
5
it's
snaps,
a work
Taylor.
In progress. A work in progress. That's the one thing.
Do we have a coach?
We have a game changer. No, we don't have a game changer analyst.
Right. They changed the title.
But they do have a special
team.
They
have
coach
someone
now.
Who's focused on special teams. Yeah. So, that will be something everyone watches closely, just like everyone with Miami will watch closely when Mario Cristobal has the opportunity to get into a victory formation, whether or not he chooses to do so. That will always be the running joke. A couple things I want to mention before we bring in our first guest, and Taylor's super familiar with this guest, Lester Wiltfong, as the Bears pick at 9. So we have been counting down to the draft. We will do that on the other side. But before that, just want to mention the Jaguars players are in the building today. The voluntary offseason program begins. So I guess some Jaguars players are there, the ones that want to be. And Mia, as far as the throwback tweet that
unis.
The Jaguars put out, is that going to be an actual throwback uniform?
It better not be a trick right now.
Right. I mean, I've seen a couple of you on the text line brought to you by Lifetime Enclosures asking me, and you're like, is it real? And I'm like, well, it's from the official account. So, I mean, I don't run the official account. I run the 1010 Excel account. So I don't really know what to tell you other than, like, you have to believe it at face value. I did get some intel this morning that it is legit.
Cool.
And it is going to be exactly what you all hoped and prayed for. Again,
that's
I don't
amazing.
Want to – round of applause, but I also don't want to speak too soon.
Yeah.
But I do know that this is in the works. And, of course, with the Jaguars celebrating their 30th anniversary this upcoming season, knowing that Tom Coughlin will be going into the Pride, you can start connecting some dots as to how this may be orchestrated.
They come out and it's like the throwback mustard ones.
The bold gold on Thursday
half
night.
The
those
different
were
multi-helmet, dual helmet.
I was shocked.
You guys wanted a throwback. It's a throwback to 2016.
I was shocked at how many people bought those mustard gold
so
jerseys.
Bad.
But
so
either
bad.
Way. All right, when we come back, we will chat with Lester Wiltfong. As the Bears pick at 9, who does he think the Bears will be targeting there? We know who Taylor wants in Roma Dunze. Who does Lester think? That is next on Helmets and Heels on 10 to XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010 XL. Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
What up, y'all? Yeah, soundtrack, what's poppin', baby? Woo!
Alrighty, if you are joining us, you know that sound. We are continuing on our countdown to the Jags pick. That way we can see who may be still on the board for the Jaguars at 17. But there are some rumors that there may be a trade-up, and with this particular guest, so we are joined by Lester Wiltfong, Jr., Editor-in-Chief at Windy City Gridiron, also host of T-Formation and Bear and Balanced with Second City Gridiron. Lester, thanks so much for hopping on with us.
Anytime. Appreciate it.
So let's hop right into this. We're not doing an exact, hey, give us who you think we're going to select, because that would involve me giving you the whole list of people that have been selected before. But we are kind of just getting an idea of what's in the Bears' mindset and which way they're leaning. And I could have done this myself, but you are very in-depth in all of this, too. So let's start that way. A few ways that you've heard slash believe the Bears are leaning with that ninth pick.
Well, the Bears are heading into the draft right now with a pretty obvious hole at defensive end. You know, that seems to be the way that a lot of pundits have them going. But, you know, the strength of this draft is really in the receivers. So if there's a guy like Roma Dunze sitting there, or even Malik Nabers sitting there, you know, I think the Bears have to highly consider taking a receiver there. But if not, you know, I know as from fans' perspective, I know a lot of us want to see the Bears trade back, maybe address that defensive end a little later.
Lester, that's the interesting query, I think, or the interesting conundrum, I should say, that the Bears, I think, find themselves in that I didn't realize, and I don't want to call it a dire situation, because anytime you have two picks in the top 10 of the NFL draft, I wouldn't call it a dire situation. But those two picks are two of the four total picks that the Chicago Bears have in the 2024 NFL draft. And so that's where I think this notion, which is also part of Mia's mock draft 3.0, which went live this morning on 1010XL.com, this notion that a team could move up into the top 10 and the Bears would be willing to trade back to get more capital, perhaps could be more reality than fantasy. Yes? No?
No, yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, Ryan Poles is, you know, through his first 2 years in the job, he has always moved around the draft board quite a bit. He's acquired a bunch of draft picks. Like you said, he only has four this year. So you have to see how do they have their board. You hear a lot of people say this is a really top-heavy draft. So maybe he doesn't value those day three picks like he would in the past. So if he can trade back from nine, pick up an additional second or even a third-round pick, I think that may be the way to go.
Lester, are you in the mindset of best player available? Just let's see how the board falls. Or do you think the Bears should go with one of those two positions like you mentioned, whether edge or receiver?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, you look at a lot of the mock drafts, and there are several that actually have Joe Alt, the tackle from Notre Dame, sitting there. And I know the Bears don't have a huge need at left tackle, but, you know, he is such a good prospect. I think if he's there, the Bears have to consider him. And I know GM Ryan Poles has talked about, he's having his team of scouts look at three positions pretty in depth, you know, tackle, edge, and receiver. So I think all three of those positions are in play.
Now, Lester, I've been very vocal about Bears taking Roma Dunze at nine, and I think you've talked about it time and time again also. One of the recent, when you can go in and kind of measure what the Bears could get for that ninth pick, one, it looks like for the Jags, if the Jags, for example, wanted to trade up, they would give up their 17 and 48 to get Rome and move the Bears down to 17. Is that something that you see as a good fit and something Ryan Poles would do?
Yeah, I think that actually makes sense. I mean, if you, like I said, if he's going to get a second-round pick in the deal, I think that's something he has to consider. Then at that point, you know, because this is a pretty deep receiver class. I know, like you, I also like Roma Dunze. I think he's there. He's a no-brainer. But, you know, if the Jags want to come up and they want to make that deal and they want to sweeten the pot a little bit, maybe give him an additional pick in 2025, I think that's the direction they go, because now they're looking at either a later receiver or at that 17 range, it's still possible. There's still a quality edge sitting there. I know Chop Robbins for Penn State, he's predicted to go in that range. So maybe you trade back, get a guy like Chop Robinson, get your receiver a little in the second round, and then pick up an additional pick.
Lester Wiltfong, Jr. of Windy City Gridiron is our guest on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline as we count down to that all-important 17th overall pick that your Jacksonville Jaguars currently own. The Chicago Bears, of course, picking at number 9. Lester, I'm curious, we've gotten Taylor's perspective, but your take, I know you mentioned the possibility of Joe Alt being there at 9 with the Bears run to the podium. Olu Fashanu could be there, Tyleese Fuaga, maybe there's interest there. Many people believe he could be a top 10 pick. What is your evaluation right now of the Bears' offensive line, knowing full well they're bringing in a rookie quarterback and want to put him in the best situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Bears are content with what they have now. They address center with a trade for Ryan Bates. They picked up a guy in free agency from the Rams as well. So I think they're content with what they have at center. I know they like Braxton Jones at left tackle. I'm a fan of Braxton Jones as well, but I could see the if they did want to upgrade there, because like I said, Joe Alt, if he's sitting there at nine, you have to consider that because he's just so good, and then you make Braxton Jones your swing guy, maybe kick him into guard if possible. But I think your guards are pretty set. I think they're comfortable with center. Right tackle Darnell Wright, who was a rookie last year, had a really nice rookie year. He's going to have a nice year coming up, hopefully. So I think they're in a pretty good situation up front, but they still need some more depth.
As far as the quarterback is concerned, Mia just mentioned you'll have a rookie quarterback. Taylor had our number one pick. She, of course, picked Caleb Williams. How do you project he'll do, Lester?
You know, he looks like the real deal. I mean, I know a lot of Bears fans were really split. I'm sure Taylor could tell you that. You know, there are a lot of Justin Fields fans out there, and rightfully so. He did what he could do for the Bears, but it's a unique situation. I mean, teams that are coming off of 7-win season don't normally have the first overall pick and a chance to draft a guy that is, you know, talked about as being one of the better quarterback prospects in years. So I'm expecting a good year from Caleb Williams. He'll have to learn a few things, have to be a little smarter with the football a bit. You know, the fumbles were an issue in college, some sacks. But if you look at those advanced analytics from college, you kind of see why he did what he had to do. So you think you project him into a pretty good team with the Bears, who are collectively coming up a 7-win season. You know, they've upgraded with Keenan Allen at receiver. They already have DJ Moore. You know, they have a pretty good offense around them. And then a defense should be a top 10 defense. So I'm expecting playoffs.
Yeah, I feel like I'm scared to say it, but same, Lester. One interesting guy that a lot of as we've done this, now we're at pick 9, and anytime we've mentioned this name, Lester, people are like, he's fantastic, but can't see him drafting there. He's fantastic, but this, and that's Brock Bowers. We were talking to Tennessee was kind of like, look, he's great. Like, he could potentially be the next Travis Kelce, but I don't know if we could take him there. What are your thoughts on Brock and if the chances, whether it's at 9 or if the Bears trade back a little bit and grab Brock?
Yeah, I like Bowers. I think he's a fantastic prospect. You know, the Bears do have Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett they picked up as a free agent. You know, but Brock Bowers, you know, he's not an inline tight end. He is more of a move guy. So if the Bears do go that route, you'll just see a lot of three receiver sets. You'll kind of see Brock Bowers kind of used as the X receiver in a lot of sets. And then eventually, you know, he will take over for Gerald Everett, who's on a 2-year deal.
Lester, like we said, as we get ready to wrap up with you on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, we're not going to ask you for a specific pick, but I do want to just kind of run through for you, and then maybe you give me your in-the-moment what you would do in terms of where we've had our conversations 1 through 8 thus far during this series. The first 3 picks off the board, of course, for the 3 quarterbacks. It was interesting hearing from our Cardinals reporter and Johnny Venerable at PHNX, because he said he thinks Marvin Harrison Jr. should be the pick, but obviously the potential for the Cardinals to trade out. Sounded like the Chargers from Shannon Farron were going to go offensive line. The Giants go wide receiver, Titans offensive line, Falcons would like to trade out, but probably go edge or corner if they can't. And so with all that said, if the board was to fall the way I just described, with the 9th overall pick, where do you believe, in your heart of hearts, the Chicago Bears go?
I would love to see, again, Rome Odunze, he's my guy, but I have a feeling that even if Odunze's there, I got a feeling the Bears will entertain a trade back offer, and I think they'll look to move the pick if they get a nice deal.
My heart would break in that situation. I guess, like, if it's Jags, I
is
guess
that because it was
Jags
in Mia's mock draft Monday too? I posted this morning, and I'm like, sorry, Taylor, send.
If it's Jags, I guess that's a win for me too, because I still get to root for Rome here. I guess that's a lot of ways that people are seeing it going, is him trying to get some more draft picks, because like you said, not only do they only have 4, Lester, but they also don't pick again until the 3rd round. So there's a long gap there between that number 9 pick and when they pick again. So we will see. But again, Lester, 10 days to the draft, so we have a busy day coming up pretty soon, and thanks for joining us.
Anytime. I appreciate it.
Our thanks again to Lester Wilfong joining us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. You can find him at Windy City Gridiron, which that is still the handle, Taylor, but I know there's been some development in terms of YouTube presence. Yes.
So, well, SB Nation has done away with their podcast, so we have pivoted recently. So we already luckily had a YouTube channel anyways, so we're just pivoting to that. So Second City Gridiron is where we are now, will solely be after April, but we are still Windy City Gridiron through April. So.
Interesting, by the way, Lester talked talked about a lot of different players, never mentioned Jared Verse or like a Dallas Turner, because he started with there's a need at edge. But, and then he talked about a lot of different players, which that leads me to believe that while there's a need at edge, that's probably not where the Bears are going to go.
And so a lot of people like, a lot of Bears fans like Jared Verse better than Dallas Turner because of the way he'd fit, the way Eberflus likes to run his defense, and the fit of him being able to set the edge and him being able to rush the passer, him being across from Montez Sweat. They like the fit of that, but they don't love it at nine. So that's why a lot of Bears fans are like, they would love an edge. They don't want to trade back to 17, ideally. Most people more are looking at like 12, 13, maybe the Vikings pick, but I know they want to go a little more. But like 12, 13 they're looking at, and hopefully getting Verse there. But people, that's why I think he didn't name it, because they are just more so he's a better fit for the Bears, but they don't think he's technically worth that nine.
Since I alluded to it, and I see some of our friends on the YouTube chat line asking, would the Jags move up that far to number nine? I did make that my scenario in Mia's Mock Draft 3.0, which is live on 1010XL.com if you want to read it. It's also on our video channels if you want to watch it. Ran the numbers on the NFL trade value chart multiple times over multiple trade value sites. All the Jaguars would have to give up to move from number 17 to number 9 overall is that 17th pick and the 48th overall pick. That's it. That's all they would need to move up to number 9 and trade with the Chicago Bears. Now,
so then you're picking 9th and 96th.
Correct. Yeah. So you do accept that there is an ocean between 9 and 96, but if it is one of those three wide receivers, would you be okay with that?
Well, then you'd have your Friday night off, I suppose, if you're a Jags
fan. Well, you would have number 96.
Have a good draft day.
You wouldn't have to pay attention as closely
correct.
On Friday.
And by the way, I may or may not have the Jags trading back into the third round again, so that's why you really should go check out my mock draft this week. But go ahead, Taylor.
It's also interesting that I feel like I've seen so many people say no to giving 17 up for Ayuk or if we're talking about Jefferson or T. Higgins
or Ayuk,
whatever, they've said no to that, but a lot are like, heck yeah, when it comes to a 17 and 48 for Rome, who you haven't even seen play in the NFL.
But I think that's because,
you don't have to pay right away.
Correct. The money wouldn't be what it would have to be for Brandon Ayuk. Mm-hmm. You would be giving up the 17th overall pick, and also, from what I was told, you then wouldn't have a first-round pick. You would still have the first-round pick, and you'd use it on Rome. If you get Brandon Ayuk, then you don't have a first-round pick either.
Yeah.
But then you also have to pull the Brinks truck up to also pay him, which I'm sure we'll get into the Ayuk discussion later. But I do want to also note that I ran it as well, because I've seen some people mocking the Jags trading up to number 8 overall. Similar situation. They would give up the 17th overall pick, the 48th overall pick. They would also have to give up their 5th round pick, which is 153, to move up to 8 with the Atlanta Falcons. So if you're thinking about how much would it take, would we have to tap into future draft capital down the line, perhaps, at least in my perspective, it's not as much capital as you think.
Sounds good. We will chat about Brandon Ayuk when we come back, and then around the other side, Matt Moscona will join us at 1 o'clock. We are going to get into Brian Thomas Jr., who's been mocked a lot to the Jaguars. Matt, of course, covers Brian at LSU, and we'll also talk about the LSU spring game that happened over the weekend. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM, live from the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open.
Helmets and Heels is switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010XL.
Well, I wonder what it's like to be the rainmaker. Okay, who added Matchbox 20? Taylor Dahl to the playlist. I love it. I haven't heard this song in a while.
I love Matchbox 20. I'm a like major 90s, like late 90s music girl, like Goo Goo Dolls, Matchbox 20, all those, like my childhood revolved around. So these are just very nostalgic for me.
Yes, I think you and my cousin Caitlin were born around the same time, like possibly even the same year. And I once made a playlist. We were going to the beach, and I made a playlist of all of that, this style of music. And she was like, "Oh my gosh, this is just my favorite thing."
Yeah, I think we were blessed to grow up to be born, Taylor, between 1990 and 1993, because we got to listen and live through two eras of Rob Thomas. in that we got to grow up with Smooth being like one of the first songs I remember hearing on radio at like 6 or 7 years old, and then realizing, oh my god, he's in a band too, and now the band is back too. So yeah, underrated artist of the 2000s and the 90s. I said what I said.
There you have it. All right, so just wanted to go over, Mia kind of did this with Lester, but the NFL draft countdown recap. Basically, the first three picks are quarterbacks. The Cardinals is where we wonder what they're going to do. Is it Marvin Harrison Jr. for this scenario? I'll say it is. The Chargers, I'm going to give Joe Alt to them, so there's no trading at this point in time. The Giants take Malik Nabers, so another receiver off the board. Titans, that's where we're not quite sure where they're going to go.
Best tackle available.
Best tackle, maybe edge, but probably best tackle, which if Joe Alt's off the board, could be those guys that you mentioned.
As much as we kind of laughed about it, I mean, Shannon Farron's idea of could Harbaugh like zig while everyone else zags? Yeah. Does he take Brock Bowers? Does he take J.C. Latham?
Yeah. It seems like they really like J.C. Latham. Granted, they're talking about trading back to get J.C. Latham.
Right. But yeah, so that's another offensive tackle.
Or even let's say
that
like the Chargers, let's say what Johnny Venerable, PHNX outlined. Like let's say they do say, you know what, we're taking Marv, and then the Vikings trade up to 5 to take J.J. McCarthy.
Another quarterback off the board. Obviously, where I'm going with this is what the options the Jaguars will have. That's why we're doing this. The Falcons, that's the first corner that could be off the board. Falcons, as far as our reporter said, either edge or cornerback, as far as Myles Garrett that we had last week. And so, or they could also trade back. There's a lot of trade back scenarios, certainly, from what we've seen so far. But the first corner, in other words, could be off the board, whether that's Quinyon Mitchell or if that's Terrion Arnold. And then the Bears, at this point, we're going to just say Rome Odunze. So you've had several quarterbacks, several receivers, several tackles off the board, potentially no edge rushers at this point. Just depends on how things go. We will certainly see picks 10 through 16, I think, being more offensive line, more corners, more receivers. But so the question then becomes, who, if the Jaguars get the best corner at that point in time, who is that? It could be the third corner. The Jaguars may have the fourth receiver pick as far as that's concerned, or they may have one of the first couple edges. That's where I think it all boils down to.
And of course, that is assuming that they don't trade up.
Yeah.
Because again, we go back to Trent Baalke lives life with no regrets. He doesn't care about the outside noise, even though he has a clown desk that a fan sent him on his desk. I can't help but feel like, you know, because there's pressure for the Jags to bounce back after a disappointing finish last year, even if some people chalk that up to injuries, I can't help but feel like Trent Baalke feels like he has to prove that, hey, I wasn't lying when I said I just couldn't find a trade partner to trade back up last year. I can trade up.
Sure.
And I'm not just saying that just because that's this week's mock draft Monday, by the way. Like, I, in my heart of hearts, think whether it is to 8 or 9, or even if it's not for the wide receiver of choice. Let's say that Quinyon Mitchell goes at 8, right? And Terrion Arnold could be taken at 13. Would you be okay with trading up to 12 with the Denver Broncos, who, oh, by the way, only have 5 picks in this NFL draft? They want to accrue more draft capital to go secure your corner opposite Tyson Campbell.
Right. All right, so let's get it to Brandon Ayuk. Someone tweets out that he's going to be trade or has asked for a trade. His agent says, not so fast, my friends, basically, in the words of Lee Corso. He says you need different sources. At the end of the day, I think we all three at this point in time think he's playing for the 49ers this coming season.
Yeah, he's playing for the 49ers, but also I think all three of us at this table and basically anyone who lives in the city of Jacksonville and lived through the Jalen Ramsey saga knows this is straight out of the Athlete's First playbook. And I say that with love and admiration for that group because they just keep doing it and people keep falling for it.
You unfollow your team.
You unfollow your team.
Justin Fields did the same thing 2 months ago.
You inform somebody in the media so they start talking about it. Then you say, no, we're not requesting a trade. But then I can almost guarantee you, and I'm not trying to predict the future or speak for Brandon Ayuk in his camp, but he'll go on a podcast and he'll reference like, you know, I want to be the highest paid receiver in the league. I believe I am. I'm not sure if San Francisco can do that because we have so many pieces. And then about 2 months from now, he'll get an extension and he'll say he never wants to play anywhere else the rest
of
his career.
This has always been my home.
Yeah. And that's why, like when I reported it, like, again, like, let's go back in March and kind of the timeline, right? Who represents Calvin Ridley? Athletes First. Who represents Brandon Ayuk? Athletes First. Who tweeted out after everything happened with Calvin Ridley that I'm all about getting my clients the bag. That's always the focus, them and their families. David Mulligetta, the head of Athletes First. The next day, all of a sudden, I hear rumblings and multiple people who I trust also hear rumblings that the Jags were told that, you know, would you be interested in Brandon Ayuk? And they said, yeah, we would. Like, let's kind of, you know, just talk a little bit. Nothing formal, just back and forth. And so this is me connecting dots, but it's also me knowing that there was at the very least a conversation about it.
Would you be interested? That's a silly question.
Right. I would also be interested in $1 million. And so, but the fact that it came to the Jags after the Calvin Ridley deal fell apart says to me that his representation is doing their due diligence. They're seeing what his market would be. They're trying to come up with, hey, you know, San Francisco, if you can't come through with this, we know team X, Y, and Z can. And that's just good business. That's doing right by your client. And it's continued even after I know John Lynch, every 49ers fan on Twitter came for me at the end of March because John Lynch said at the owners' meetings that Brandon Ayuk's not going to be traded. And now he blings up, he's going to request a trade. Like, this is from their playbook. This is how they do it. And they've done it for like 7 years now, and everyone keeps falling for it.
Hey, Taylor unfollowed Tenton XL, so I think she's trying to become the highest paid heel around here.
Wow.
When we come back, Matt Moscona joins us from Baton Rouge. You are listening to Helmets and Heels on Tenton XL 92.5 FM.
From the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010 XL,
this is Helmets and Heels.
Let's ring up another guest on the All Pro Roofing phone line.
I was wondering if RJ would play call in Baton Rouge, Lauren, Taylor. I'm not going to lie.
Hey, Stevie Ray Vaughan is never a bad selection.
I was waiting for some sort of tie-in as we welcome on our next guest. Kind of a mini-series of sorts we're going to be doing here on Helmets and Heels this week as we kick off the 1 o'clock hour, getting to know some of the potential prospects who could be there at number 17 overall should the Jaguars not trade up or trade back, as we have illustrated throughout the duration of today's program. Who better to talk to when it comes to those LSU Tigers who could be on the board than Matt Moscona of ESPN Baton Rouge? He does it all. He hosts their afternoon drive show After Further Review. He is the master of multimedia production, and he joins us now on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. How are you doing, my friend?
Hey, y'all. I'm doing awesome. And Stevie Ray Vaughan over calling Baton Rouge 100 times out of 100. I love calling Baton Rouge, love Garth, but probably the most overdone thing whenever I do a radio hit. So, yes, I appreciate the change-up.
Nailed it.
Shout out to producer RJ. Lauren is celebrating if you're not watching us on YouTube right now.
Lauren, Matt, still owes me push-ups, by the way, Lauren Brooks. I haven't forgotten you owe me push-ups.
No, Matt, you owe me push-ups because Jameis Winston did not start week 9 for the Saints. But we didn't have the injury part of the bet.
I just thought you were I thought you were so much more of an ethical person. You had so much more integrity than that. I mean, you can fill your audience in on that later, I suppose.
Yeah, Matt, you better watch out. We're actually at a golf course right now. There's plenty of room. We're at Hidden Hills for the Guggen Open. There's plenty of room. Yeah. If we need Lauren to do push-ups and break them out right now, we can certainly film it.
I have to do 50 straight in his scenario. I think he has to do 50 straight in the scenario. I thought we came to the agreement that we were just both going to do them.
We'll stitch a TikTok together. We'll make it happen. Matt, but as I alluded to, we have you primarily on to discuss Brian Thomas Jr., but I also think you can't talk about Brian Thomas Jr. without talking about Malik Nabers. Enlighten us. The wide receiver room, year two under Brian Kelly, where those players were previous in their career, where they find themselves now as projected first rounders.
Yeah, so Malik and Brian Thomas are both Louisiana kids who were in the same signing class together. Malik was from the Lafayette area. Brian Thomas is from Walker, who's just about 15 minutes east of Baton Rouge. And they both came in with tremendous expectation. And it took Brian... the best way to describe Brian Thomas, I think, and when he was coming out of high school, he was high four-star, five-star guy, but he was very quiet. Like, he didn't go through the whole take your visits, do the hat, commit, decommit thing. He just waited to the very end, made his announcement very subtly, and came to LSU. And I think the way that I would describe Brian Thomas is he was a lion that didn't know he was a lion. And once he figured it out and that switch came on and you realize, oh, the dude's 6'4", 210, and runs a 4.3, you saw what happened this year. Malik is that alpha. Malik's the guy you go out to practice, and he's the one who will moss a teammate and stand over him and let him know he mossed him. I mean, he is that guy. And I think every team that's seen the production and then had an opportunity to meet not only Malik but Brian as well, they get why both these guys have raced up draft boards. I mean, the production is undeniable, but the personality of these guys and the work ethic is there as well. That's why both of them are projected top round picks.
And Matt, I really like Brian Thomas Jr. I've been on that train for a while now, but everyone has this one knock against him if they're going to have one, and that is that he only had the one productive season. What say you about that?
Well, so it's so weird because LSU, and it's valid, I understand it. Brian was a productive receiver. He just got caught in a logjam at LSU. Whenever you know you show up and you have guys like Kayshon Booty, who obviously Kayshon's, you know, his career has gone the path not many thought it would, but Kayshon, and then you had Malik in that same class. And you, as odd as it is for LSU, which for a decade was this program that all of your, you know, your listeners who are Florida fans would know, like LSU's passing game was a punchline for a decade here. And it was less miles, 3 yards in a cloud of dust. But this state produces incredible skill talent. And you've never had, I mean, just look through the history. If it was Josh Reed and Michael Clayton or Odell and Jarvis and Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase, now Malik Nabers, Brian Thomas, all these guys are Louisiana guys. So that's kind of I don't even know if it's a knock. It's just the explanation that Brian Thomas was just down the pecking order. It was always in there, but, you know, he finally had a chance to show it this year.
Now, Matt, was there anything on the football field that you felt in those 3 years increased, because you just named some of the things, and obviously we could also point to Jaden Daniels and how much more comfortable he got in the LSU offense too. But when you look at, he went from 359 to 361 to over 1,100 yards, and then 2 touchdowns, 5 to 17. That's a massive leap. So what would you say, if anything, on the football field improved the most during those few years?
Yeah, he led the nation in touchdown receptions this past year. For Brian, I think so much of it was opportunity, but his ability to stretch the field is probably the biggest difference. Because when you look at a guy that's his size, when he's 6'4", 210, I'm actually not sure what he officially weighed at the combine, but he's a big receiver. I think you would typically think that's a guy that's more of a someone that Saints fans would know, a Michael Thomas mold, right? A guy that's going to go over the middle and make tough catches, which he can do. But the way that LSU used Brian Thomas was stretching the field, and his ability to beat defensive backs over the top was something that I didn't know that he had, and we didn't really see until this year. So that's the thing that I think has most NFL teams intrigued with Brian Thomas. Look, guys, when he went to the combine, I thought Brian probably had the most to lose, meaning you have such a deep receiver class. I mean, we all agree, right? I mean, it's a deep receiver draft class. And if you would have gone to the combine, Keon Coleman is probably the best example of this, and didn't run well, you would have fallen down the pecking order. So the fact that Brian Thomas went, validated that speed, I think is the reason why he's solidified. And I think that's the thing we saw develop most this year.
And I think it was interesting, Matt. I got a chance to catch up with him, and when I asked him, like, what do you pride yourself in more? Is it you're stretching the field? Is it your size? The fact that you can be that bigger red zone target, even if you're quote-unquote undersized, compared to some of those other dudes that do it? He said my speed is, like, the number one thing that I'm most proud of. And I found that fascinating, number one, because once upon a time, Urban Meyer said, oh, so famously, speed, 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 and Jacksonville should be the priority. And secondly, because I didn't come into the combine process saying that that is who he was as a prospect.
Yeah. The sub-4.4 speed surprised me, but it shows up on tape. And if I had told you the thing that maybe was a concern, it would have probably been his hands. I went back and looked at my notes from a fall scrimmage we got to watch and last year's spring game. And Brian Kelly gives us – it's kind of incredible. I mean, you don't see this often in college. He gives us access. I mean, we get to go watch full practices, full contact scrimmages. So there was a fall scrimmage they had before this past season, and Brian Thomas had about 3 drops. I mean, goal line drops and – it was one of the things that I was most interested in watching as it developed throughout the year, and there was never a shred of that. It's probably just like a bad day. It's just a bad day for him. But there aren't a lot of holes in that game, man. He's got the size, he's got hands, he's got the speed. He's going to make somebody very happy. And the other thing, too, that you always worry about is you're going to take someone in round one. It's like, is money going to change somebody, right? Like, is, you know, what are you dealing with personality-wise? And I think when you go back to the recruiting story with Brian, that kind of illustrates who he is. He's just not the guy that's going to be super loud, flashy, maybe a little atypical for NFL wide receivers. But I think that's probably going to bode well for Brian Thomas at the next level.
And especially for LSU wide receivers. Matt Muscona is our guest. You can find him on Twitter at exactly that. That is his Twitter handle, Matt Muscona, at MattMoscona. And, of course, he is the host of After Further Review on ESPN Baton Rouge. Be one of his 66,000 followers on X. Matt, before Lauren gets to ask you about the spring game, because I know she's very excited to hear about what you've seen in Baton Rouge over the last few weeks of spring ball, I wanted to ask you about a couple other prospects who are coming into the NFL draft from Baton Rouge. First for me is Mason Smith, a polarizing prospect alongside Makai Wingo. Those two guys, I could see them both going in the second round. I could see them going in the fourth or fifth round. And then one more, if I may, to Jordan Jefferson, the nose tackle. So those three guys along the defensive front.
Yeah. So I'll go in that order. So Mason Smith is your like boom or bust prospect. He was a five-star number one defensive lineman in the country as a true freshman, played a bunch and was fantastic. Tore his ACL on the first defensive series of his sophomore year. And it missed his entire sophomore year, came back this year and it never really clicked. I would compare him a lot to Brian Brzee, who the Saints drafted last year. It was a very similar story. Brzee was a five-star, number one prospect coming out of high school, battled injuries, dealt with a family tragedy. And there was really this big question about what version of the player were you going to get. If Mason Smith figures it out to match the physical ability, he's an all-pro caliber type talent physically. But we just haven't seen the production consistently. So it's a knock, and that's why he's not going to be a first-round pick. Makai Wingo transferred in from Missouri after 1 year, and he's a really impressive young guy. I don't know if he can be a three-down lineman in the NFL, but he's a guy that's low to the ground, very strong, can push the pocket. Kind of a surprising pass rush ability from the interior. And just something else on Makai. He's a guy that missed the final month of the season. He had surgery, came back to play in the bowl game. In an era where guys choose to opt out, like he came back to play in a bowl game because he wanted to be with his teammates. He wore the number 18 jersey, which is like a leadership honor at LSU. So that'll be a team captain leader guy. Someone will be thrilled to have Makai. And then Jordan Jefferson only spent 1 year in Baton Rouge. He transferred in from West Virginia. And guys, LSU's defensive line was poor last year, to put it mildly. Jefferson was by far their best player. I think he wanted to say, let me go from West Virginia into the SEC to challenge myself to see if I can continue to play at that level. And he was by far LSU's most productive interior player. So I'm not a draft analyst or a scout. I don't know where those guys might be taken in the draft, but all three of those guys can play at the next level. But Smith is the one with the gigantic like boom potential, if he can ever figure it out, to go with the physical ability.
All right, Matt, as Mia alluded to, I want to ask you about the spring game. I also want to ask you about LSU baseball. So I've got several questions for you, and then I'm going to have these ladies say who they think won or lost our bet. We'll get to that in a second. But
okay, that's what I'm waiting for, okay?
I know, we should have led with that. Let's get it to the quarterback, Garrett Nussmeier. I know he looked really good. Tell me about him, and tell me about the offense under Brian Kelly this upcoming season.
The strangest thing about LSU's offense is – so you lose your OC, who was the Broyles finalist. You lose your quarterback, who was the Heisman winner, and you're losing two first-round pick receivers. And everyone thinks they're going to be awesome again, like no drop-off, which is stunning to think of it, but it may actually play out that way. Like, I don't think LSU is going to be the number one offense in the country again. Like, last year they led the country in scoring and total offense. Like, I don't think it's going to be that. But I fully expect they're going to score 30, 35 a game. Garrett Nussmeier's in his fourth year. He looked awesome. The thing, like, Garrett's got all the ability. The knock on him has always been decision-making. Like, he'll put the ball into careless spots. We didn't see any of that this spring. Not saying it's not still in there, but he seems to have unlocked that. They've got tons of receiving talent, and they returned four of their five starters on the offensive line. The guards are both four-year starters. The two tackles will probably be first-round picks next year with Will Campbell and Emory Jones. Mason Taylor's a junior tight end. Like, the offense is going to be awesome. The real big question on this team is how much better can they get defensively? Like, guys, LSU was 106th in the country in defense last year. They scored 45 on the road at Ole Miss and lost. I mean, it's just – it was – you could make the argument – literally the worst defense in LSU history. So they're going to score. The offense is going to be one of the best in the country. Again, they've got talent and ability and all that stuff everywhere. But the real question is just how much better can Blake Baker make this defense? I don't think we got that answer in spring. I think they're going to go hit the portal in the spring period, and we'll see how much better they can be. And I mean, they really don't need to be – I mean, you don't need to go from 106th to 6th or 26th, but, like, can you be 56th? You know what I mean? Like, can you just not be the worst ever? And if that's the case, they might be good enough to be, you know, a 10-2 team and make a 12-team playoff. But they got a lot to prove on the defensive side. And I don't know that anybody saw enough defensively this spring to think, yeah, they're ready. I'm not saying they won't be by the time they get into and through the season, but it's hard to believe right now.
Matt, just a quick Jaguar connection. Matt House obviously came to Jacksonville after quite an interesting 2 years down in Baton Rouge as the defense coordinator. And obviously he's back to being a linebackers coach, where he coached Josh Allen at that position at the University of Kentucky. Perhaps that's more of his natural fit. How much of it did you put on him versus just kind of the cards he was handed and dealt?
This is not a cop-out, but I think – number one, you obviously have to have great talent. And LSU, in particular in the secondary and a defensive tackle, doesn't look like LSU has looked in the past at those two positions. But that's still no excuse to be 106th in the country. And a lot of that was on House and his inability to adapt to his personnel. I think Matt is a better fit in the NFL. I just think conceptually some of the things he was trying to do with young players never translated. And he was unable to adjust to fit what they do well. So Matt's a good coach. I mean, he was with the Kansas City Chiefs when they won the Super Bowl in 2019. Tyrann Mathieu said it's one of the best coaches he's ever been around. The guy knows football. He's a really good coach. I just think it was not a great fit at the time at LSU.
Yeah, Matt, final question as far as the baseball is concerned. 3-12 in conference play. Both Florida and LSU were in the College World Series National Championship a season ago, and now both not having great seasons. Florida's just a little bit better than LSU. What are people – are they losing their minds there about baseball?
You just try to jab me in the nose with that one? That's unbelievable. I mean, look, they lost Paul Skeens. They lost Dylan Cruz. They lost seven players from their everyday lineup. And I think everyone expected – there would be, you know, a type of transition this year, probably leaning on pitching and defense while the offense struggled to catch up as the season went along. But just nothing has gone right for this team. They can't win close games. They've already lost five games by either one or two runs in conference play. They're just not good enough. And look, the schedule was unforgiving at the start, where you had states in Florida, Arkansas, Vandy, Tennessee. So it's going to lighten up in the second half, and they might be able to go on a little bit of run. But guys, when you're 3-12, I mean, at this point, it's going to take a hell of an effort just to get into the conference tournament. So there's a possibility they can get there because the schedule does lighten up in the second half. But it's to say that the result has been surprising would be a pretty gross understatement.
And Matt, I want to go back just real quick because you were talking about the defensive struggles for LSU last season, and it kind of brought me to, because you also mentioned a little bit ago about how players, it goes beyond how they are on the football field and how they react to, you know, adversity and all of these different situations. So when you look at Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. and an offense that was very explosive, very high-powered, but then a defense who kind of let them down in a lot of situations. How did those three in certain moments when they needed to kind of rally past that?
Yeah. Well, Jaden's probably the guy that's like, you know, there's pitchers on the mound who you can't tell if they're up 10 or down 10. Mm-hmm. That's Jaden. He's unflappable, and you just never really see him get too high or too low no matter the situation. But I don't mean to say this just because I'm on in Florida, but guys, like the biggest moment of the season that you want to prove what Jaden was, look at the Florida game. Mm-hmm. The week after he was concussed against Alabama, he came out after having not really practiced all week. And then every time they needed a response, boom, there goes Jaden for an 80-yard touchdown run. Boom, there goes Jaden for a 50-yard run. Boom, there's Brian Thomas deep. I mean, it's just that game. I'm sure many of you remember it, but if you want to see those three guys, put on that game film and say, well, that's what you're getting with those three if you draft them. they're special. They're going to make NFL teams wherever they go. They're going to make their fans really happy, man. Those three are some really special that have come through here.
Well, we could listen to you for hours, my friend. Good thing you have a three-hour program where you get to do just that. And I will leave you with this because we could keep you forever, but we obviously have a time limit, and we're so appreciative of the time you've given us. This is from the 307 on our text line, Design by Lifetime Enclosures. Love Matt. Listen to him almost every day. My two favorite radio shows connecting. What better way?
I love it.
The bet. We have to finalize
the bet.
Oh,
that's true. We do need to finalize the bet.
So real quick,
at
SC Media Days a few years ago, Matt and I made a bet, 50 push-ups for the loser, that he believed Jameis Winston would be the starting quarterback for the Saints all season long, barring injury. I said, no, he's going to not start all season long because he's going to throw too many interceptions. But we didn't have the injury provision in the bet. Mm-hmm. So I said he will not start week 9 for the Saints. And he didn't start week 9 for the Saints because, I think, was it a concussion, Matt? He had
the Saints were 5-2, and he tore his ACL against the Bucks. Devin White horse collared and tore his ACL. The Saints were 5-2 at Halloween. There is no way Jameis was going to the bench, Brooks. You lost. You were wrong on premise. You don't have to do the push-ups if you don't want to. If you want to win on a technicality, you can win on a technicality, Brooks. That's fine. I understand, but you know deep in your heart of hearts what you meant, because you thought Jameis wasn't going to play well enough, and the Saints were leading the division. They beat Tampa on Halloween, and I can't believe I have to curse Devin White because he's a great LSU Tiger, and I love him, but he screwed up a potential great season.
It's funny, Matt.
That's my final case.
It's funny, Matt, because I had a similar bet with someone before that season, too. But mine was that he would throw 25 or more interceptions, and then that didn't happen because he also got hurt. So I had, like, the same kind of weird thing where I was like, wait, this doesn't count.
All I'm going to say, Matt, is that Lauren did indeed lose the bet because now Derek Carr is the quarterback of the New Orleans Saints, her least favorite person on the face of the earth.
That means I lost because I got to watch Derek Carr quarterback my favorite team.
You know what? I will do the push-ups. I just have to get ready for them. I worked out this morning, so I'm not doing them today. But I will do them at some point, Matt, and I'll tag you on Twitter. Thank you so much for joining us.
All right. Thanks, y'all.
Right, absolute legend. I can't encourage you to go check out their social media and YouTube channel in particular out enough. Again, it's ESPN, 104.5 ESPN Baton Rouge. He is Matt Moscona. They have sub-channels for their Saints and LSU coverage that is just off the charts and may or may not be an inspiration for how 1010 does YouTube and multimedia in the coming months.
All right, when we come back, we'll get it to Florida football. Nick De La Torre joins us, senior writer at Gators Online. He was there in Gainesville, of course, for the Orange and Blue game, so we will get his thoughts right here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels is brightened by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Yeah, I mean, I think we threw it to the other team a couple times. We'd like to have those back, but overall, when given opportunity, I thought we took advantage of it. You know, I do think that those guys have been awesome. I mean, I can't compliment those two guys enough.
Billy Napier, the head coach of the Florida Gators, commenting on the play of his not one but two quarterbacks in Graham Mertz and the freshman sensation DJ Lagway. For more on Florida's spring practices and the spring game this past Saturday, Nick De La Torre joining us now on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. You can find him on X at De La Torre. And, of course, he is the senior writer for Gators Online and On3 Sports. And before I begin, Nick, first and foremost, mazel tov on the upcoming young child that will be joining your family. Lauren Brooks was very quick to point out to me last week when I said, let's make sure we get Nick on Monday, that you will be having a football baby, you and your wife, which God bless you for the timing of that one.
Yeah, great timing on my end. Week 3 of football season with a newborn on the way. So I've never been good at math, definitely did not count out those months.
Will the Gators be 3-0 at that time? That remains to be seen. Let's not put the cart before the horse, Nick, and let's begin with what you saw on Saturday at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium.
Yeah, I think I left this spring game probably feeling better than I did last spring game, that 10-7 one. I think Florida, for the most part, put on a good show. You know, as the spring game goes, you can script it the same way that WWE scripts WrestleMania, and if you want something to come across, you can – make sure that happens, and that does. So I think what they did was they showed the future with DJ Lagway. They let him play. They let him run around a little bit, throw the football. But I also saw better tackling. I saw the secondary, which I think struggled a little bit last year. I think you saw Asa Turner, DJ Douglas, Traquez Bridges, the three additions through the transfer portal that they showed up and the impact that they've made. And overall, I think you leave this spring game healthy. No one got hurt during the game. And a little more confident about the team if you're a fan than you did probably going into the spring.
Yeah, Nick, from being there live, to me, Jaden Baugh jumped off the page and everyone was checking their rosters to see who exactly is this guy. Though he was just a three-star, once you did more research, you realize he played several different positions in high school, played both ways, and he's a pure athlete.
Yeah, I think Billy Napier, the first time he went to Columbia High School, asked about him and thought he was just a linebacker. Jaden made it clear that he wanted to run the football. It was really interesting to watch him run because he's 6'1", 238 pounds, and doesn't look that way when he's running the ball. I thought he had some shiftiness, some wiggle in the backfield, and but not to the point where you're accusing him of dancing. He does get north and south. I think as every young freshman, you probably look at them and you think, man, I'd like you to be able to block, pass block a little bit better. But certainly him and KG Daniels, along with Treyon Webb and Montrell Johnson, I think they're going to make people in Gainesville forget about Trevor Etienne until that one weekend in Jacksonville.
Nick, it seemed like a lot of the chatter coming out of this weekend was defensively and just the technique and tackling, kind of some of that fundamental stuff that maybe was missing or they struggled with last year. What were your thoughts on that defensively and what you saw from that side of things?
Yeah, I think they put a lot. I talked to Will Harris. It was, I think, before even signing day. And I asked him, it was right when he took the job, that he's secondary coach, asked him what he thought about the team. He said, well, I haven't really had a chance to watch them yet. I have my iPad packed up. I'm about to fly back to California to get my stuff and to move here. And then I hadn't talked to him again, but I saw all of the offers going out to the guys in the transfer portal, and I thought, yeah, he must have watched those cut-ups and saw that Florida's tackling was not up to par. So I think Will Harris in the secondary, and then Ron Roberts, who came over from Auburn, have made an emphasis on tackling. And Ron said, you have to be excellent at tackling. You can't just be good or okay. You have to be excellent. So it's hard to practice it. You don't have any two-a-days anymore. You're not really tackling full to the ground. You can tackle those, you know, foam donuts that you roll around as much as you want, but it's a lot different tackling a foam donut and tackling Jaden Baugh, for instance. So I think Florida's done what they could in terms of doing live tackling. Will Harris runs his group through live tackling drills before every practice where he's one of the guys being tackled holding a pad. So I think Florida has, you know, clearly made it a point of emphasis this spring to be better tacklers. It's difficult to really truly practice it, but I think they've gotten found some creative ways to do that safely during spring.
Couple more for Nick De La Torre on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Nick, Lauren says she believes there will be a package for DJ Lagway this fall, akin to maybe what we saw with Anthony Richardson in the early parts of his freshman year, certainly what we saw from Cam Newton in his season in Gainesville. What say you?
Yeah, there's, I mean, in this day and age, there's no sense in redshirting DJ Lagway. If DJ Lagway is the player we expect him to be, he won't be in college for 4 years. If he's not the player we expect him to be, he'll probably be in the transfer portal and go somewhere else to play at some point in his career. So there's no sense in my mind of redshirting DJ Lagway. He can help you now. I looked it up this morning. Tim Tebow only threw 33 passes his freshman year, but he played in nearly every game. And I think DJ Lagway, you need to find interesting ways to get him involved. And I think he has shown enough in the spring game throwing the ball. He's shown enough, certainly in high school, winning every award that a college or that a high school quarterback can win, that he can throw the ball. So even if you're bringing him in just to add something to the running game, I think there's enough there that defenses have to respect his arm and play on it. So, yeah, to me, you have to find a way. That it falls on Billy Napier, Russ Callaway, Brian O'Hara to find out exactly how we can use DJ, because there's no mistake about it. They're probably running two different quarterback meetings. You have Graham Mertz, who will be 24 years old in December, and in his final season, his second season of the offense, and then DJ Lagway, who I think Willis still hasn't had prom yet. So you've got two different kind of quarterbacks in terms of their understanding of the offense. But there's no denying DJ's athletic ability. So yeah, I think you have to get DJ into the mix somehow.
Nick, from what I can tell, you're a big fan of punters. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
So what did you think about seeing Tommy Townsend out there?
That's his guy.
Yeah.
That is his good friend.
Out there in the no shirt, orange and blue overalls.
Yeah, I didn't know what to call those. Overalls, an overall onesie. It looked comfortable. Johnny has always been fashion forward. Mm-hmm. Tommy following suit with the long hair. Great to see the Townsend brothers back and supporting, you know, Johnny's Foundation, which does so much great stuff to raise money for the Pediatric Cancer Ward here at Shan.
Yeah, in case people missed it, when you're at the game, they had both the Townsend brothers come on and do a punting challenge.
Oh,
and
fun.
Before that had happened, my parents and I were sitting, Nick, on the sideline about 10 rows up from the orange side. And I see Tommy Townsend walking by. I didn't see Johnny at that point. And I was like, oh, Mom, there's Tommy Townsend. She's like, that's a punter? Like, because he's jacked, right? And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a punter. But, yeah. All right, Nick, thank you so very much for joining us. And we will be sure to check in with you throughout the season, maybe not during the birth week of your son or daughter.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, have a good one.
Thanks, you too.
Again, you can find him at De La Tour on X. And, of course, he also has everything Florida Gators baseball on lock, although not really sure if fans want to be looking into that
Florida
the current juncture.
Won yesterday, Mia, but yeah. That was after losing Friday and Saturday to South Carolina. The pitching woes continue. We'll get to that in here just right here in just a little bit. When we come back, though, Taylor has an Iceman update for you as the Iceman make the playoff push right here on 10 to XL 92.5 FM.
Helmets and Heels from the First Coast Lighting Studios at 1010 XL.
It was right after senior year, just before the summer disappeared.
Little Lainey Wilson for a Watermelon Moonshine on this Monday. We are live at Hidden Hills Coastal Equipment Guggen Open. Seems like everybody's having an absolute blast out there. Speaking of having a blast, Taylor, you went to the Iceman game, what was that, Friday night?
Friday night, yes.
And they won.
They did win. It was an overtime win. So much fun. It was 3-2 with, and I want to say, like 3 minutes-ish left in the third period. They ended up tying it 3-3 and then scored pretty quickly in overtime. So that was fun. And obviously, if you haven't been to the overtime hockey is 3-on-3, so it's so fast and it's intense from like the second the puck drops. But so now, unfortunately, though, they ended up, so they had an overtime win on Friday, an overtime loss on Saturday, and then a loss yesterday.
Dang.
But they notched 3 points between Friday and Saturday because of that, so they technically just needed a win or an overtime win on Sunday to be able to clinch the number one spot. Fortunately, it was a loss, so Greenville, who's been pretty much ahead the whole time, took the one seed for the South, and so now the Icemen will play the Everblades, who I hate the Everblades. They've knocked them out of the playoffs the last two seasons, but there is a little – I was talking to one of the guys. He was from the Icemen sitting over there kind of passing out some stuff to some of the Guggens golfing, and I was talking to him a little bit about it, and I was like, how are they feeling? Because both years they've gotten knocked out. 2 years ago, Everblades were the higher seed and knocked them out, but last year Jacksonville was the higher seed, and they still got knocked out by the Everblades, and they're just that, like,
they're
the
just
thorn in their side.
Yes, every year. So he said they're fired up, though, because they were really – they were not happy last year after getting knocked out. They did just get some of their guys back down from the AHL, too, so that should help them out. But the Icemen still get the number two seed, so they do have home ice.
Nice.
Against the Everblades. So that starts Thursday at 7 p.m. is game one. Sunday at 3 p.m. is game two here in Jacksonville. And then they'll hit the road for three games if needed. And then they'll be back if needed for their final two games for this series. So it's going to be exciting. It's going to be intense because, again, there's just that little extra rivalry between the Florida Everblades and the Icemen.
I'm trying to think, what's the all-time series between – I mean, all-time, I'm sure it favors the Everblades. But I feel like regular season this year, I feel like the Icemen got the better of them at least a handful of times.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look. But they definitely – I mean, the Icemen have been playing, especially since December, have been hot. But unfortunately, Greenville just stayed hot too, so they never had that chance to like get ahead. As soon as they'd Icemen would win 6-7 straight, then so would Greenville.
Looks like 24 Everblades have won 24 times, Icemen have won 25 times.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I thought it was pretty tight,
incredibly close. Yeah. So yeah, that'll be fun to monitor. JacksonvilleIcemen.com is where people can go to get tickets. Like you said, Thursday night, puck drops at 7 o'clock, Sunday 3 o'clock. As far as the Jumbo Shrimp are concerned, they split with Charlotte last week. The next six game home series begins tomorrow morning at 11:05 for Education Day against
back-to-back
the Norfolk Tides.
Back-to-back weeks of Icemen at home. The Shrimp at home.
Yeah.
I didn't expect
I love
that.
And
I, this early. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
well,
Icemen
they started
too.
On the road at Durham, and so then home against Charlotte, now home again against Norfolk Tides. Like I said, first pitch tomorrow for Education Day, 11:05. Just quickly want to mention no alcohol is allowed for that game, so just wanted to put that out there. And then when it comes to FSU baseball, improved to 30-5. FSU now number 5 in the Baseball America rankings, 8th in D1 baseball rankings. Swept Miami over the weekend. And ladies, I'll give you a saucy nug when it comes to FSU. The Noles beat Miami in football, basketball, and baseball this past calendar year. Also, the Noles won, of course, the state championship in baseball because they beat both. They swept Miami and they swept Florida. That's their first season sweep against rival Florida and Miami since 1960.
Wow.
Saucy nugs.
Yeah, there you go. Nice. First time since 1960 for FSU. So they're very happy, obviously, with Link Jarrett. A lot of people are saying there's a parallel between Mike Norvell at FSU and Link Jarrett at FSU. Mike Norvell, first couple seasons, not great, but then drastically improved through the transfer portal. Link Jarrett is doing the same thing when it comes to baseball. Like we mentioned, Florida lost 2 out of 3 to South Carolina. Florida's now 18-17 overall. Florida allowed, this is the pitching woes, like I mentioned, allowed 10 runs Friday, 9 runs Saturday, and then in yesterday's victory, allowed 9 runs as well. That one was way too close for comfort. But the big news, Jack Caglione hit his 20th home run of the season. He also pitched yesterday. Yeah, 5 innings pitched, 3 earned runs. His season ERA right now at 3.89. And then locally, Florida plays host to JU tomorrow night, 6:30 first pitch. JU did lose 2 out of 3 at Austin Peay. Like I mentioned, they're at Florida tomorrow night. The River City Rumble is this weekend, so make sure you head to JU as JU plays host to UNF. First pitch beginning Friday at 7 p.m. And then finally, when it comes to UNF, UNF lost 2 out of 3 at home to Lipscomb, but UNF is at UCF tomorrow night, first pitch 6 o'clock.
I want to mention really quick because there's this water, like a water fountain thing down there.
A water fountain thing?
Yeah. At Hidden Hills? At Hidden Hills?
It's not technically a water fountain. It's more
bottled water.
Yeah, well, right? It's almost like if you go to get like a fountain drink at a okay. So it looks like that. It looks like a fountain drink thing, but there's only one option, and it's water and ice. Anyways, I felt very silly because I could not figure out how to get the thing to work over there. And so, like, I'm messing with it for a while, eventually got it to work. But I've watched, like, 12 people go up and also struggle getting this water out of this thing. So I'm glad I'm not alone. And just now there was 3 guys surrounded it, and they're all, like, waving their hands in front of it trying to get the water out.
That's
so it's
fantastic.
Not just me. Though. It's
no,
not just me.
It is not just you. And that is going to do it for us here live at the Coastal Equipment Guggen Open at Hidden Hills. Mia, have fun tonight with Caitlin Clark.
7 o'clock, baby. Most watched, anticipated WNBA draft of recent history, even though we all know what the outcome will be.
That's correct.
Maybe she'll fall to 3.
Did you see the Indiana Fever literally tweeted out 22 hours to go? Not 24, 22 hours to go. Say
I
no
love
more.
It. Great job, RJ Saunders, back at 10XL headquarters. For Mia O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, I'm Lauren Brooks. These heels are made for talking. We will talk to you tomorrow. Don't go anywhere. XL Primetime is next.